Testing. Hello. You are listening to A Pastor's Newspaper with Dr. Castro, a podcast helping you read the news with the Bible in your hand. I am Dr. Castro. It's good to be with you. And I'm on a roll. This is the third episode and three straight weeks. And so we're picking up some momentum. This is really good. And have a really interesting article would like to, or news, piece of news that I'd like to share with you and talk with you about. And an issue that's pretty important to me. And so hope everyone is doing well. I love the spring. I love the weather. That's just a perfect warm cold, right? That kind of 60 to 7 degree weather. And it's a great weather to be outside. And so I don't know about you, but the frustration with the spring is just the weed season, right? And being in Memphis, which is Bermuda grass and grows really thick and green when it's hot. When it's not hot, you get weeds. You get these other species of vegetation in your lawn. So that's been a constant battle. It's a daily battle. And I win some and I lose some. So I'm not into the spending a ton of money on the lawn. I don't mind bringing effort and some work, but don't want to spend a ton of money just to make my grass, look like a golf course when it's not a golf course. So I'm a little stubborn with that, or I guess me and my wife are pretty stubborn together with that. So I am very supportive of kind of organic chemicals. And so we do use a little bit of those, that are coming soon, that we kind of put in the yard on a kind of annual basis. So want to support you all in your efforts to rid your lawn of weeds. I have a colleague here at Central who, first year of spring with his new home, and he got the dreaded "my entire lawn is a bunch of weeds," which is never fun. You want a nice, you want your grass to look nice. You don't want it to look like a weed fest. And so pray for you all in your fights with your weeds. It is a product of the fall. It really, as we see in Genesis 3, the toil and sweat that you produce thorns is what God said to Adam. And you feel that way with your lawn, that I want something that's, I don't mind, cultivating and working the land, but I don't want it to produce things that are ugly. I want it to look nice. And yet they keep coming back. You keep spraying and they keep coming back. So continue to pray for you. And hopefully, even something like this, your lawn can put your thoughts to a better day when there will be rest and our labor will produce fruit always. That includes the lawn factor with the weeds. But the article, the episode today is not to talk about weeds in your lawn, but it is spring and it's a part of a new season. But I do want to talk about, and for my University of Kentucky listeners, the UT Vols beat y'all in baseball in the series last weekend. That was cool to watch. But I'm going to talk about the University of Florida, where both Tennessee and Kentucky come together to hate the University of Florida. There are a lot of schools in the Southeastern Conference, including Florida State, who's in the ACC, that despise the Florida Gators. And almost like, even though Tim Tebow, Christian brother, you want to support him, but you're just, because he was a Gator, just unable to embrace. If he was a Clemson Tiger, now Gamecocks, Clemson, they don't like the Clemson Tigers, but I have no problem with Clemson Tigers. If Tebow would have been a Seminole, I had no problem. I have no problem with the Seminoles. If he had been a Miami Hurricane, no problem with the Miami Hurricanes. But the Gators, that's another matter altogether. There is even, if he had been an Auburn Tiger, wouldn't have a major problem. If he was an LSU Tiger, wouldn't have a major problem. But if he would being a Gator or being a Crimson Tide, I just can't support you. But he became a Gator, and therefore, even though I respect and love him as a brother in Christ, I despise his Florida-ness too. That's something we'll all just have to deal with in heaven. Because I doubt I'll ever meet him, but I guess it could happen, you know? But just don't think that it's likely that I'll ever meet him. But hey, you never know. And if I do, I'll give him a hearty go Vols. And he'll just have to do with that, even though I believe he was 4-0 against UT when he was a student at Florida. So he has a lot he can push back on me. But anyways, an article that was in The Economist this past week was very interesting. And it's about higher education. I've invested a lot of my life in higher education, worked. Not only did I graduate from the University of Tennessee in my undergrad, but worked on college campus did college ministry early on in my kind of ministry career, and then wrote my doctorate dissertation on collegiate ministry. And so I've thought a lot, read a lot, experienced a lot, and love college sports. I love college sports. I've really gotten into baseball. I really love watching the Vols play. I can watch a softball game, you know, if it's a good matchup, again, like Tennessee and Georgia or Tennessee, Florida or Tennessee, Oklahoma, I'll sit down and watch it. Obviously love college football, but love more. And I've talked about this, I think in the first season of A Pastor's Newspaper, you'll have to go back and listen, but about the importance of college sports to Southern towns and these things. But I just love, it's not just the sport. Hence why I think people who love professional sports, they just like the stars. They like the athletic feats. People who love college sports like them for reasons other than just the sport. They love them because they identify with the campus, they identify with the town or community that it surrounds, and so I mean there is a loyalty or a love affair with a school, right? My love for Tennessee started off with I loved the Vols, I loved football, I loved orange and white and the T on the helmet. And I loved just the sport, and I have great memories of going to Knoxville and going to the games and walking around the campus, but I didn't go to school there. I was elementary age, middle school age, and then maybe high school age, but then it became a student, right? And so then it became the place I went to school. And then it became my place that I graduated from. I'm an alumni of the University of Tennessee. My wife is an alumni of the University of Tennessee. My wife was a part of the Pride of the Southland band. We take our children to a game just about every year, and we take them to Knoxville, and we have pride, right? We love, and we're very proud of our school, right? And so it's a part, and now we live back in Tennessee, and we're now Tennesseans, and it's a state pride thing. So it's all part of that, is a part of loving colleges and loving what colleges represent. And if someone, I've been around the world, and I've been to Europe too, and Europe's college system is different. Like, number one, sports are not a thing in college. And so, like, loyalty to a school in the school spirit is not the same in any way as it is in the U.S. And the depth, right? The depth of love, the depth of passion for your school is very unique to America. And I would say very unique to, I would say, the Midwest, probably also definitely the South. And, you know, Southwest, but maybe not as true in California. I'm not spending that much time in universities in California, so I'm not really sure. I work with two guys who went to school at universities in California, and they hardly ever talk about the university, right? If you talk to me, went to UT, the first thing they know about me is that I'm a UT fan, right? So it says something about me. It's a part of my identity, which is not so much true about those from California. I wouldn't say that's all true, but generally it probably is true. And so universities are a big thing, and it's an important issue in the United States. But one of the things with colleges today is, and it's been this, you know, this kind of like general fact understanding that most universities are more liberal leaning, right? And some far more than others, right? There are some very conservative schools that are private, especially, that kind of brand themselves as like the conservative university. They'll get a conservative education, all these different things. Where the, you know, most of your public universities, like the University of Tennessee, Memphis University, you know, University of Florida, there's a, you know, it's a state university and tends to be far more progressive or liberal. Well, what's interesting, what's going on in Florida, the state of Florida, is Ron DeSantis, the current governor of Florida, has basically branded Florida as where wokeism or wokeness goes to die. And I think that's, you know, their, his views on, you know, COVID and all the restrictions during COVID. Florida was like the state who went kind of the opposite of a lot of the other states. And so, again, Florida's the branded where woke goes to die. And so as the governor, one of the places that he is kind of flexed his muscles, I know we've Disney World is one of the places where he's flexed his muscles. But is the university system. Ray Rodriguez is the chancellor of the state university system of Florida. I believe he is an appointment and I'm not sure how it works with the governor and the school system in Florida. So I'm not really sure about those type of technical maneuvers and how much power a governor has over universities. But I do know that the current president of the University of Florida was a former senator, Republican senator from Nebraska, Ben Sice, who I'm a huge fan of. He's a Christian. He is a well-spoken conservative, and Ben Sasse is one of the guys that I would have loved to run for president, and was one of the ones I was pushing Ted Cruz to nominate as vice president when he was fighting for the nomination in 2016. But there's been and University of Florida has been a kind of the spotlight has been placed on that state, especially from their kind of push against wokeness and progressivism in the college system. And one of Ben Sasse's kind of big points is that universities need to produce graduates who can thrive in a disruptive job market. Basically not be one trick ponies where all they know is kind of their own ecosystem or echo chamber of faculty who are just going to continue to basically give them, one side of all these issues, either be in the liberal arts or, in with history, politics, psychology, philosophy, and all the other things. And so one of the important values or views going on in Florida is producing students and graduates of their schools that can be educated citizens, that can speak about things that are big and broad and meaningful and enduring. And so one of the schools that is new at Florida, this is one of their colleges, is the Hamilton Center. Will and Bowden is the head of this college at the University of Florida. He's the Hamilton Center director. And the purpose of the Hamilton Center is to basically they've created a major where that goes back into kind of like some classical learning. Where you're going to learn about philosophy and economics and law and about books and ideas and not just simply, you know, because I think liberal arts really over the last several years has really lost purpose. A lot of money from the state is going to STEM majors. You're talking about science, technology, engineering, and mathematics. And health related industries are and studies are part of that STEM focus because it's very practical. It helps the state. And really, if you want to go back into the past, a lot of public schools were a part of an initiative during the Civil War of creating land based universities for the sake of really kind of building up the infrastructure of a lot of states after the war. So this has really been a part of the heart of a lot of public universities, is kind of these more practical related vocational studies. And so really universities have become more and more vocational training centers, under the kind of umbrella of these kind of like academic institutions. And so really liberal arts over the long, for a longest time has really lost a lot of purpose. And really it's a byproduct of progressivism, where it's just produced a lot of nothing significant, nothing substantial, nothing that can, as Ben Sasse is saying, produce graduates who can thrive in a disruptive job market. They can think critically. They can read, they can put together arguments, they can communicate effectively, they can think broadly. And this is, you know, one of the byproducts of kind of classical learning, and presents an important phrasing or terminology that I think has been very much lost in our society, is classical liberalism. Liberalism is not a bad word. It's become a kind of a term that is used to present a political ideology, but really liberalism, or classical liberalism, is really kind of liberty and freedom and freedom of conscience and free thought and free speech. I mean, really the foundations of the American political system is based off classical liberalism. This is John Locke. This is a lot of the political philosophers in Great Britain, especially during leading up to the Revolutionary War, that were the byproducts or the foundations of America. And so we've kind of lost what classical liberalism is, and really what's going on in Florida, what Ben Sasse is stating, what Will and Bowden and the Hamilton Center is trying to establish, is a return to classical liberalism, which is really producing thinkers and scholars. That's one of their biggest goals, is to create scholars, to give students a better understanding of civic thought. And what you see happening with the Declaration of Independence and the Constitution and the Bill of Rights and the Federalist Papers and the obsession with Alexander Hamilton is scholars. These are students of, or products of, classical liberalism. And really what we need in our society is more scholars, people that are able to talk about big ideas and to talk about them well, and to enter into the marketplace of ideas and to engage that marketplace effectively and well. Because really, liberal arts majors have really not been trained to do that. They've been coddled. They've been told that these are free spaces for you not to be, challenged by views that you differ with. That's the whole point of higher education, especially in the liberal arts, is to be challenged, on the way you think by other ideas. And so what's going on in Florida is interesting, because I think what some people are critiquing what's going on at Florida and the Hamilton Center as, oh, I see. So you're just replacing progressivism and progressive faculty with right-wing conservative faculty. You're basically replacing one with the other, and basically it's just a power shift. And, you know, that could be going on. I think some would definitely want that, just replace liberal faculty with conservative faculty, almost treating universities like courts, right? Replacing Democratic judges with Republican judges, right? But it would be very easy to, as someone who's conservative, to fall into that trap and say that's a positive and good thing, when really the fact of the matter is that really all you're doing is whoever's in power, it shifts the faculty, shifts the committee. But what you want is you want balance, and you want those who have different ideas, the market, pluralism. Colleges should represent pluralism, different ideas, and a space where those ideas can be talked about, read about, argued for. And that's where education happens, where the marketplace of ideas, who has the best idea wins, who makes the best argument wins. And what's really going on in society is winning the battle, basically winning the political battle, and then protecting yourself from challenges. Basically, you're building walls. You're building your castle walls, your fortress walls, so that you can't be conquered. That's the strategy. That's not actually what we want. This is actually from the new Hamilton Center director, Will N. Bowden. He says, "We're interested in giving students the tools and the practice to think for themselves, but also to bring them back an appreciation for the texts and the ideas that were involved in the founding of America." Catch that right there. We want to give students the tools and practice to think for themselves, not to give them a new brain that we have hardwired and brainwashed. It's for them to think the way that we want them to think, but to think for themselves. Ray Rodriguez, who's the chancellor of the State University System of Florida, said, "If at the end of the day, what we're doing is merely training conservative scholars from one institution to another, then we have failed." And I think that is a perfect sentence to what we should want. We should want the University of Tennessee, a university that I love. I was a part of the liberal arts department. I was a political science major. You want conservative and liberal faculty, and you want them helping students to think for themselves, to think critically, to read widely, to write and make arguments, and using sources to make that argument, testing and having to interact with opinions that challenge their own, to put students in the same room who think differently about issues. And at the end of the day, they have to be trained and taught not only to read and to think and to consider, but also how to engage with someone who disagrees with you and say, "You know what? You make some interesting points that I have not considered before. I will give you, I agree with those premises. However, I disagree with your conclusion. I do agree with your premises. And then to challenge them to think about their conclusions and say, "I agree with some of your premises, but I disagree with a few others that lead to your conclusion." And that's how the marketplace of ideas are to work. And as Christians, you know, we believe in Christ Jesus, who was the Son of God, who came to the earth, who died and died for our sins, and then rose from the dead in history, in time and place. We believe in a God who created. We believe in a God who is sovereign over time and history and over the things, and he is governing over, and he's preserving the universe. We do live in a fallen world, right? And things happen in our world that are that cause a lot of the problems that humans deal with individually and as a group. So we know these factors, but Christianity is an idea. Now it's the true idea, right? It's the idea that's the most credible. It's the idea that's the most consistent. It's the idea that is the most sound. It's the idea that corresponds best with reality, right? These are all true about what Christianity is, but it is an idea. It is a belief. It is a worldview. And other people have other worldviews and other beliefs. And what we want is for the Christian and the Muslim student to be able to sit and talk about philosophy and to have faculty who are facilitating and faculty that are presenting works and books and other articles that they are reading, that are challenging, that are providing substance to their ideas, to then them for them to be able to carry on a persuasive conversation. And the hope is that the Muslim student would see the truth of the gospel and the validity of the gospel and the validity of Christ and who he was and his identity, that he was the Son of God who came into the world and he had authority, and he had authority to heal, he had authority to exorcise demons, that he had the authority to speak the words of God. And then he backed up that identity by raising from the dead. And that the Muslim student's like, I'm convinced by the truth of who Jesus is. Therefore, I believe. That's critical thinking. That's students being given tools and practices to think for themselves and creating scholars. And I want to say this as a plug, that if you are a parent and you're listening to this and you're considering sending your student to a Christian university, that I would encourage you to send them to Boyce College, because I believe one of the things I would say about Southern Seminary that I went to, I got 2 degrees from there. And I would say that, what is the legacy of Dr. Al Mohler, who's been the president there for 30 years now, is he trains and creates scholars. I went to that school not knowing very much of anything. I had a bunch of ideas, a little of this, a little of that. I left that school a scholar. And I use that term not to say that I'm like some kind of Ivy Tower individual, even though I do wear a bow tie and I drive a Subaru, which kind of doesn't help that argument at all. But I am a reader because of that school, and I read a lot. And I don't just read like a very focused amount of stuff. I read pretty broadly, and everyone who comes out of that school are scholars. They think critically. They read widely, because that's what Dr. Mohler does. He reads widely. His podcast, The Daily Briefing, is him providing content and thoughts about what's happening in the world. He has people on his podcast where he is engaging them, and so not all of them are Christians, on philosophical matters and religious matters and theological matters and political matters. He is a scholar who's created it, who has reformed an institution to be ones who produces scholars. And so I have a lot to thank Dr. Mohler and his faculty in Southern Seminary for doing that for me. And if you want if you're thinking about what you want for your kids, now, if your kid is going to do a STEM major, engineering, mathematics, science, technology, health, you know, there are a lot of institutions you can send them to where they can get that training, and they can get that degree, and they can get a job, and they'll be, and I really support that. I think that's really great. But if your kid's interested in the liberal arts, especially, and they're interested in, you know, English or political science or philosophy, economics, any type of thing, you need to find an institution that's going to help them think critically and really produce a scholar out of them. And Boyce would be that place. Union University would be that place. Those are two that I would recommend as Christian universities that would help them become scholars, to think critically, to be a graduate who can thrive in a disruptive job market, someone who can be an educated citizen, who can speak about things that are big, broad, and meaningful and enduring, someone who has been given the tools and the practices to think for themselves. And that's the institutions you should look for. And so I think one of the mistakes that parents make is they try to find a school for their kid that fits kind of some of the AL secondary matters. Like, it has a good football team, and you know, it's in a certain city. Those are fine things to consider, but they're obviously not primary things. But where is your kid going to, where is your child going to become, going to be educated to be a critical thinker, that they're going to appreciate written works and they're going to interact with those written works? Those are the questions you need to ask yourself. And Florida has done a thing. I would, this is crazy, but if with the new Hamilton Center, and if my daughter or my friends were interested in liberal arts and Tennessee didn't have anything like that, I know that there are some other schools in other states, like let me mention a few of them here just to kind of provide them, but Arizona, North Carolina, Tennessee, and Texas, and I haven't done, and there's a new school at Arizona State called the Civic and Economic Thought and Leadership. And so maybe this will take on where other states will press on this as well. But this will be really key for my kids on the schools that I will encourage them to go to. Is it going to help them be a critical thinker? Are they going to create a scholar? Are they just going to, it's just going to be a school they go to. They go to some football games. They make some friends and they just have a college experience. That's not good enough for me to want to send my kid to that school. If you do want to send your kid to a Christian school in particular, let me press upon you. Boys College in Louisville, Kentucky. It's a part of the Southern Seminary. I taught there for a semester. Great school. And then Union University as well. Actually both Bulldogs, by the way. That's in Jackson, Tennessee. There was also a campus in Memphis, but in Jackson, Tennessee, those would be two that I would press upon you. And there are probably others, but those are the two that I'm most familiar with. So hopefully this has helped you. If you ever have any questions, if you're listening to this and you'd like to ask about universities or colleges and what I think about them, don't hesitate to email me at mcastro@centralchurch.com and would love to interact with you on that. And if you ever have any other concerns about, you know, universities and colleges and what they're about and should you send your kid there, obviously do your research, but I can also help you as well. So just send me those thoughts, those questions, and I can look into those for you and help you with that. So hope this has been helpful. And this has been a pastor's newspaper. Please continue to read the news with the Bible in your hand, and hold me back next week to do 4 episodes in a row. And we want to be a weekly podcast, not a whenever I can get around to it podcast. And so I hope to have that. I hope to be able to continue to support you and your understanding of what's going on in the world, and to think very from a biblical worldview on what's happening in the world. So have a wonderful weekend, and hope to be back with you next week.